grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that
welcome
you
to the Wrecking Yard with Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. It's actually Wednesday for me. I'm recording. I got shows in Gladewater, Texas this weekend. I'm going back up to the Piney Woods, up to my little area where I'm from. And all manner of things are going to be tasked in the next few days. I'm not going to have time to sit down and do the podcast. Still hadn't got the Cadillac sorted out, but I'm working on it. Funny enough, I had to rent a car on Turo for this trip because I decided to take the whole family with me. And the only car within my budget was a Cadillac XTC. So now I'm renting a newer Cadillac to drive to East Texas. So let's just hope that goes well and the EBCM don't go out on that 752 on the way there. I don't know. I don't know much about the newer ones. We'll see. We are going up there. By the time you guys watch this, I will already be on my way home. And hopefully it will have been a successful weekend. I don't know. Ticket sales aren't great, which always stresses me out for the shows. So there's that to contend with. I'm hoping they get better by the time we get there. And I got ads running and we'll just see, but some of them areas like that are hard places to market. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I'm also going to go Friday and have lunch with my father and his wife. And Saturday, the plan is, I've talked to my cousin Jimmy and gotten permission from him, who now owns the property that the Wrecking Yard was on. Jimmy's also the one that found my mama's car in the woods and pulled it out for me. And so the plan Saturday is meet my cousin Ricky's going to meet me over there in Lever's Chapel, and we're going to load up mom's Volkswagen. And Jimmy graciously allowed me to look around the shop and spend a few moments with the shop. And he's a good dude. We weren't really close growing up. He's quite a bit younger than me, and I didn't see him a lot when we were younger. But, the past several years, this dude has, him and his wife are coming to the show Saturday night. I'm glad I put him on the guest list because, man, this dude came and saw me perform in Shreveport years ago. And it was messed up, too, because I hadn't seen him in a long time. Hey, a little possum. Huh. A little possum, not possum, but a possum just run by. It was messed up, man. That night he come see me in Shreveport. He wasn't with the lady he's married to now, but that night he come see me in Shreveport, I was so excited. Uncle Bobby came that night too. Uncle Bobby and Aunt Lori, and I think Granny came that night, saw me perform in Shreveport at the Funny Bone. At least I was there the whole week, so they came to some of the shows. I was working with old Steve McGrew. It's featuring for old Steve McGrew. And funny enough, that story kind of ties into the man I wanted to talk to y'all about today, my Uncle Terry. But when Jimmy came to see me that night in Shreveport, me and Rachel had, we had not been together very long, but we had just moved to a house in Oak Forest, Houston. And it's kind of a neighborhood had some problems in. It's a lot better now, but back then that neighborhood had some issues, and house, of course, had burglar bars and all that kind of shit all over it. But Rachel had texted me while I was on stage, and when I got off stage, she said she was scared. She thought somebody was messing around in the backyard or something. She could hear somebody in the backyard, and we had caught somebody in our backyard one night before, and I had run them off. I have a history. This is the funniest thing. So I have lots of guns. I'm pretty well trained with the use of firearms. You spend a lot more time shooting than I do now, but I used to go all the time. But despite having those things at my person, and they're in safes, and I got a biometric safe and everything that's for quick access and all that good stuff. Despite having those things around me, I have a bad habit of chasing intruders away naked with hammers. It's happened at least 3 times. One time, for sure, an intruder. Another time, we're pretty sure it's an intruder. And another time, may not have been nothing. But all three of those times, I have woken up, bolted out of bed with maybe nothing on more than a pair of underwear. And because I was a contractor for so many years and I work on stuff at the house all the time, there's always a hammer nearby. And my first instinct is to always just grab the hammer and go chase something outside. And one night at that particular house, she had heard a noise in the middle of the night. She's a very light sleeper. I'm a heavy sleeper. She heard a noise, and I woke up, and it sounded like somebody crunching around in our backyard in the leaves. And I bolted up out of bed and under britches, grabbed a hammer out of the kitchen, set off in the backyard, and somebody run around inside of the house, jumped over the fence. That was the end of it. Wasn't the end of it. We didn't sleep much at night. We were freaking out about that all night. It was a new neighborhood. Anyways, getting ahead of myself. She texts me, says, "Hey, I think somebody's in the backyard. I'm hearing somebody walking around back there, and I'm kind of freaked out because I'm here by myself." And her dad at the time was like in Huntsville or something, really a good distance away. And so I called my buddy Steve, texted him, and asked him if he'd go over there and check it out and hang out. Him and Rachel were friends. Wasn't a prop. You know what I mean? Like watch movies, bullshit. But in the meantime, she wanted me to stay on the phone with her because she was really freaking out. And Jimmy and his friend had come and seen my show. And I didn't get to really talk to him after the show because I was on the phone with her and she was rightfully so freaking out about maybe somebody, an intruder being in our yard. And I always hated it. He ended up having to leave, and I didn't get a chance to thank him for coming out and hanging out and everything. He's just a good dude. And but funny enough, that same Shreveport trip, I went fishing with my cousin Justin, who is Terry's son. And that's one of my favorite fishing trips I've ever been on. We'll talk about it more. Anyway, so we're getting ready to go to Gladewater. We got mama's in there packing the kids up. And I cleaned the bathroom because there's nothing more. That shows you how old I've gotten. Is my favorite thing is clean the bathroom right before we go out of town. So come home, bathroom sparkling, it's perfect. And go in there and take that first back home dump, and it's a good time. It's just what you need to welcome you back into your home. That's how old I am now. And I've been getting stuff ready. I had to, of course, finish writing this episode, and I went ahead and wrote next week's episode or parts of it. Because one of the things we're going to do is, you know, if everything works out, we get to go out there and get the car. We're going to do quite a bit of filming out there, and I'm going to do some narrating for you guys. So next week's episode is going to be kind of a special episode where I'm going to take y'all to the wrecking yard, you know, and, you know, what's left of it. So I think, and we're going to get what's left of mom's car. And then I've reached out to Mikey Brown, and me and him are going to brainstorm, figure out what to do with that car. So I'm really excited about that. I'm also full of some trepidation. And it's the same trepidation I always get about going home. I don't feel like I belong there anymore. I do like going, and I like seeing everybody. But I always feel this little sense of unease that my time there is over. And it's not, you know, that's what they tell you, you can't go home. Well, you can't, because it's not the same. It's not the same place. It's not nothing. Some things are the same. You can go eat you a char burger, but Charlene ain't there. You know what I mean? I can go look at that shop all I want, but you know who ain't? Papa ain't there. My dad ain't there. I'm going to see my dad, which I'm excited about that. But, oh, we just, our relationship's full of work. And I don't even know any other way to describe it. We're just not quite there yet. I'm also sort of studying on getting up Sunday morning and going and sitting in a service at the First United Pentecostal Church. Just to see the inside of that building one more time and, I don't know, say goodbye to some things. That's what I'm gonna do this weekend, is I'm gonna say some goodbyes to things, because don't think I'll be going there again for a while. We'll see. I want to get too deep into it, but Uncle Bobby's daughter is in the hospital, Shawnee, and it's looking pretty grim. So it's just not a good situation, but I think that might be the last straw for me. As far as, I mean, sometimes I just think that old woman cursed us all. I don't know, it doesn't matter, but I do sometimes think that. Let's do some sponsor copy and get on with it. This season of The Wrecking Yard, fueled by Black Coffee, grit, and the goodwill of folks like you. We don't have a sponsor yet, which means your name, your brand, your logo could be sitting right here where this empty cup is. If you want to stand out, if you want to ride shotgun with us, step up and claim the spot. Sponsor The Wrecking Yard. Let's build something unforgettable together. If you don't want to or you can't, that's okay too. Just keep listening. My Uncle Terry, it's my dad's youngest brother. And my dad's almost a baby. So it's, if I had to line it out for you, it goes, I believe it was Stanley, Larry, Gary, Linda, then Jerry and Terry. A lot of airy names there. His name was Terry Lee. Terry Lee. And that's how they called him. Terry Lee. Terry Lee. Terry Lee. Jerry Wayne? Terry Lee. They never called Larry by his middle name. I couldn't even tell you what Larry's middle name is. And Gary, I think, was Gary Jean. They call him Gary Jean every once in a while. But, and of course, Uncle Stanley's middle name was James. That's what Stanley wanted to be called, James. I should have just called him Uncle James. When I was real small, I don't know how much younger my Uncle Terry is than my dad. I think maybe it's just 3 or 4 years. It's not much. But I heard stories about him all my life. My dad used to tell me that every time me, Mom, and Papa left to go to the grocery store, go run errands, that Aunt Linda beat the shit out of him and Terry both. And I you know what? That just doesn't even surprise me. They all grew up in a warlike, chaotic household. Told me lots of stories. But Terry Lee was the baby, and he got away with more shit around Papa Longmire. Papa Longmire seemed a little softened towards Terry Lee. And Terry Lee could get the old man's goat and mess with him. And my dad always sort of envied the way Terry could get them in and out of shit when they was growing up. They used to tell me a story about one time him and Uncle Terry and Aunt Linda and I think two of the neighbor boys decided to play war in the cornfield and ruined a section of this old dude's cornfield. And he came over there and got Papa Longmire involved and some butts got whooped and shit went down because they ruined a whole mess of cornfield. And he said Terry was the only one that didn't get his butt whooped over that because he come up with some reason why he didn't know it was a cornfield. Sounds ridiculous. When I was a kid, him and Aunt Robbie was already married, and they had they lived in the neighborhood. So my mom and Papa lived right on Highway 31, right going through Kilgore, Texas. And they lived pretty close to Fritz Swanson Road where the church was. And right behind their house, there was a little neighborhood back there, and there was King's Highway and Bill Street, and there was one of these streets back there was called Tidewater Street. And when I was a little kid, Uncle Terry and Aunt Robbie lived in this big old, it seemed huge to me when I was a kid. It probably wasn't that big, but very, very old house that was built on that street. I remember they had a pool table in their dining room because Uncle Terry had seen The Hustler. And he liked play. He decided he was going to be a pool player. And they had this big old mean cat that just hated my guts. That's mostly what I remember about that house, is that cat just jacking me up every opportunity it got. That cat hated my guts. And sure enough, I was asking my dad about it. I was talking to him the other day, and I brought this up. And I said, man, do you remember them having some big old gray? He goes, that big old mean gray cat? I was like, yep, okay. I didn't imagine that. That son of 50 hated everybody except for them. But you know, when my parents got married, Uncle Terry still lived at home. Me, Mom, and Papa. And, well, my Uncle Terry's about the only person my Papa would praise. He'd just tell you, boy, Terry Lee, I tell you what, Terry Lee never raced a motor. Never raced a motor. That boy would work on car, never raced a motor. That's Papa's big unforgivable sin. Go out there and race that motor out in the driveway. Boy, Terry Lee, he never raced a motor. But one story I did hear about him was around that time period, right before Mom and Daddy got together. Uncle Terry had him a 1965 Mustang, a little white Ford Mustang. I believe it was. And I think he had a date with Aunt Robbie, and he had decided to change oil in his car before he went on this date, and he hadn't had the car very long. He pulled it up the driveway, and he got the pan, and he got up under there, and he took the drain plug out, drained the oil. And my daddy said he was working on something else, doing something else. Terry came over there, and he said, man, I think there's something wrong with my car. It's only supposed to take 5 or 6 quarts of oil, but I've already put 8 quarts of oil in it, and it still ain't even showing on the dipstick. Dad went over there, checked the dipstick. Yeah. Dad said they were standing there for a minute. He looked down, he noticed oil was leaking out behind the front tire, running out on the driveway. He said, Terry, did you put the drain plug back in it? And Terry said, yeah, of course I put the drain plug back in it. And then he just kind of poked him and pointed to that oil leaking out behind the tire. And Terry's, oh, shit, I forgot to put the drain plug in. Jumped back over there. And he had done poured all his new oil down through the motor and then overflowed the pan that I was using to drain the old oil. And my dad said Papa Longmire come unglued about all that oil on his driveway, which was funny because it was just an oil tar driveway to begin with. But apparently the old man just lost his mind about it. My Uncle Terry is the biggest of the Longmire clan. My dad was tall. My dad was 6'2", 6'3". Uncle Terry could look down at him. I don't know how tall Uncle Terry was, but I suspect in his prime, probably 6'4", 6'5". He's taller than Uncle Gary, way taller than Uncle Larry, and taller than Stanley, taller than Papa when he got this full height. Papa was pretty tall. He's over 6 foot, but Uncle Terry was big, big. And I seen pictures of him when he was young. He liked powerlifting. He was strong as an ox. My favorite thing about Uncle Terry was he's the only other one in the family that had blonde hair and blue eyes, like I did, you know? And I've later since found out that my great-grandfather on that side, his name was John Thomas. He had blonde hair and blue eyes. And my papa didn't get it, but somehow I got it. Uncle Terry got it. What I mostly remember about my Uncle Terry was he was just always really kind. As a kid, I liked talking to him. He was always interested in talking to you. He was always interested in what you were doing in school, what was going on. When I first started getting cars and stuff, he was interested in that. He was good. And when my dad and the brothers would sit around and tell their stories, Uncle Terry didn't tell that many stories, but he'd sure cut up and laugh at the rest of them. He had something happen to him. I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called Guillain-Barré's disease. But it was some crap that happened to him, I think, when he was like around 20. And it basically paralyzed him, what was going on. And it took him a while to recover from it. And I don't think he ever got quite back to the weightlifting. When I was growing up small, he was a big man, like heavy weight-wise. He was just a big old man. And beautiful musician, incredible musician. My dad was a trombone player. My dad was a pretty good musician. But Uncle Terry could play just about anything. If it had strings on it, Uncle Terry could play it, and he could play it well. But what he mostly did in the church was he played banjo with the church band. And I just have a special affinity for banjo players. Not that I know anything about it. I don't know anything about music other than I love it and I enjoy it. But to me, the banjo just looks so much more complicated than a guitar. It just looks harder. And I like them sounds it makes. Maybe that's a little bit of deliverance I got in me. Maybe that's just watching Uncle Terry sit up there at the church and play that banjo. Got you. Watching Uncle Terry play that banjo for the church. He taught the Sunday school class I was in when I was 7, right about the time when we moved to Houston. I was in him and Meemaw taught the Sunday school class for that age group. Meemaw had been teaching that age group for a real long time, and Uncle Terry had come on to help her. And you know, like even in that community, we were still like, we lived out in the sticks, you know. We didn't live in city, in town. We didn't have nice cars and nice things. And I had two friends in that class. One of them's name was J.D. Hain. And the other one's name was Mark Ferris. And I'm still friends with Mark Ferris to this day. We've reconnected over the years. But they were just a little bit older than me. They were a couple years older than me. They showed me my first naked woman. I remember that. They had it right behind the church. There was a softball field. And off behind that softball field was this little outbuilding that had fallen apart out there in the woods. And they had found a stash of nudie mags, like Hustler and stuff like that. And they had stashed them out there in that building. They took me out there to see them one time. And I remember the first time I saw lady parts, it scared the shit out of me because I didn't know what the hell was going on down there. But probably far too young to be seeing that sort of thing. But I was just worried something bad had happened to her, because I only knew what I had at that point, and it didn't look like that. Pentecostals not real big on sex education and such. They just tell you not to have any until you get married and then figure it out on your own. Good luck. No roadmap. But they were in that, they was in that class with me, and they kind of picked on me a little bit, and it's just the nature. I don't hold them any animosity. It's just the nature of the thing. I was small. I was pretty weak compared to them. They were both physically stronger than me. They were both a little bigger than me. And they lived in town. You know, Mark and his family, they had a nice house and nice cars, and his dad did pretty well selling insurance. And JD's dad was the assistant pastor at the church, and they did all right. They had a nice car, stuff like JD had go-karts and all kind of crap like that. JD broke his leg riding go-kart around the church, run up under somebody's car or something. I can't remember what happened, but when I first met JD, he had a broke leg. And we, but I remember they was picking on me in that class one day, telling everybody I had picked my nose, and I probably had. I was a booger picker. I was just a little dork. I was the dorkiest dork that ever dorked, okay? I was just the dorkiest kid, okay? I spent all my time in books and the rest of my time wandering around with my dog in the wrecking yard. I was just a little dork. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have good social skills. I was pretty shy. And they was just picking at me about this and making fun of me. And I remember Uncle Terry just kind of stood up out of his chair and went over there and looked at him. He goes, "You going to try to look me in the face and tell me you two boys never picked your nose before?" And they both like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's so different about you picking your nose and him picking his?" And I remember being glad he was defending me, but also like, "Can we stop talking about me picking my nose?" And he said, "Everybody in this room's picked their nose before." And I don't know, he just kind of dressed them down a little bit. He's like, "Is this the kind of thing you want to be doing in church, is picking on somebody else and making fun of them? Is that the kind of message you want to send the Lord?" And straighten them boys, you know what I mean? Got them off my back a little bit. And it's a silly little memory to remember about somebody. My Aunt Robbie has taught, or I think she's retired now, but she taught special ed my entire life, and my Aunt Robbie is just one of the kindest women that I know. I'm hoping we get to see her while we're up there. She devoted her life to special education and teaching students with disabilities. And now her daughter, their youngest, Julie, is doing the same thing. And I love the way they talk to my son Noah, because they understand him. And he vibes with them right off the bat. And I just so appreciate that out of them. It's rare you meet people that really know how to vibe with somebody who's different. And they're just so good at it. But Aunt Robbie was kind of like that for me when I was growing up. She was always so kind to me about, you know, stuff like that. Like, I feel bad about this. Her son, Justin, is younger than me. And there was a period of time, I remember when we were little, that I kind of bullied him. And I don't want to make justifications, excuses for it. It was mean. I was bullying him because he was smaller than me and I could. And I think I probably learned the behavior from people that was bullying me. And it went away very quickly, but I just remember her kind of laughing about my mom, like, "Oh, this is just something they got to go through. Jerry Wayne's not mean. He's not mean-spirited. He's just..." I don't remember what happened. I remember I was climbed up in a tree and I was shooting him with a water gun. And every time he got close to me, I'd hose him down with that water gun. And he was getting really upset. And there was, over the years, me and him maintained some level of closeness and stuff as we'd grown up. And I'm glad, because he's about 6'5" and probably a good 320 pounds and could bend me over like a damn lawn chair if he wanted me to. And probably pick me up and throw me in a dumpster. He's a big old stout boy. Two of my younger cousins, him and Dominic, both 6'5", monsters of men. that it used to be fun to, when they got of age, to go to the bar and take them to the bar with me, though, because they both like black leather jackets. It looked like I had these two goons with me. And I ain't gonna lie, I got a little mouthy. Got a little mouthy when I had, you know, Brutus and Cletus behind me. Even though I'm not sure either one of them really knew how to fight, but they were just so ominous, people left us be. And I took advantage of that some.
Sure.
Sure I did. Aunt Robbie was always so kind to me. She always was. And she said she was there for me at a time she... It's not even a big thing, but at the time it was everything in the world to me. My family's very, very religious, and all the people in that little town that we grew up with, in our church community, everything, also very, very religious. So when somebody dies, what do they say? She's in a better place. She's not in pain now. She's off with the Lord. She's in a better place. And I know they mean well with it. I know the intentions are well-meaning. That's what makes it so hard. Because when people were saying that to me at my mom's funeral, and they were just, it was like a line check of people coming up to, couldn't wait to tell me that. She's in a better place now, Jerry Wayne. And every time they said it, it would break my heart, because all I could think was, what better place is there than with us? There's no better place than with us. That was the better place. And, you know, while I am somewhat, a person of faith and somebody who does show some concern for my soul, I'm not a big believer in heaven and hell. I won't go too far into that, but I just, not a big believer in those things. And I remember all those people were coming up to me and were saying that. And when Aunt Robbie come up, she just hugged me. And she said, I'm so sorry y'all are going through this. I love y'all so much. And it just meant everything in the world. And I whispered in her ear, I was like, oh, I feel like if one more person tells me she's in a better place, I'm going to lose my mind. And she hugged me tighter. And she said, kiddo, if you have to punch somebody, I got your back. And of course, I wasn't going to hit anybody at a funeral or anything like that, or some poor stranger saying a nicety, but it was just knowing, I don't know, it was just knowing who she was and that she was there for me in that moment. And it was, you know, sometimes moments aren't big. It's, you know, the thing I really think about the older I get is some of the most important moments in my life, some of the things I really dwell on and think about when my mind is free to wonder, are the very small moments. So it was a small moment. Wasn't a big moment. Took seconds. But she had my back. I knew she had my back, and it made me feel better. Uncle Terry sticking up for me with them boys. Not a big moment, but an important one. Small, little. I think our life is made up of these little tiny little molecules of moments. And I think when you really think back through your life and you look at the things that are important to you and the things that shaped you, you're going to find that a lot of those small moments did a lot more of that sanding on you to make you who you are today than the big moments. The big moments, sure, they make changes to your personality, your psyche, your wiring, the way you look at things, your perspective. Of course they do. But I bet if you could somehow do an analysis, you would find out that the small moments did far more to shape who you become. I was talking to my buddy Adam that's working with me on the book, my editor, and telling him about a small moment meeting a Holy Ghost preacher in a tire shop one time and having a conversation with this dude, and how he told me I had an anointing. That it was my job to make people happy and bring joy. And just a complete stranger. And he prayed with me. And anyways, I think it's those little moments. And that's a very important little moment to me. even after, like, when we moved to Houston, you know, some of the family would visit from time to time. But Uncle Terry and Aunt Robbie came all the time. Now, their youngest, Julie, she had problems with diabetes and stuff when she was young, and she had to come down to the hospital here in Houston so they could put, like, a pump on her that pumped insulin for her and everything, because she had whatever the real scary diabetes is. I don't know a lot about it, and so we had seen them a lot because they had been down dealing with that, but they would come and visit us quite often, and it was always a good time. My mom would always plan a host. We'd go to Astroworld, or a lot of times we went down to Brad's Bend, went fishing, because Uncle Terry loved fish, and Dad liked fish, and we'd go down to Brazos Bend. We didn't have no boat or nothing. We'd just go find us a little quiet place out there on Elm Lake or somewhere in the state park, and we'd have a little mom and Aunt Robbie make a big old picnic, and we'd hang out and fish and not catch a whole lot of nothing, but we'd have a good time. And Uncle Terry, like, no, like, I'm not his kid. I'm sure he raised his voice at times, but even when he was hot, he didn't really, like, he would get a little bass in his voice. He kind of had a more nasally voice than me. He'd kind of talk out of the back of his nose a little bit, and he'd lean his head back like that, and I can't quite do it, but I loved talking with Uncle Terry, and Uncle Terry was into computers before anybody was, you know. Uncle Terry ran CAD machines and stuff, and he was really smart, and he knew a lot about automation, and he was like the first guy, him and Uncle Bobby, the first guys I remember building computers for themselves. And they had two kids, they had Justin and Julie. And they'd come down, we'd have a good time, we'd go fishing, all kind of stuff, lug cooler around all over Brazos Bend State Park and fish. And my dad would, of course, be irritable and pissed off about something before the end of the day. And Uncle Terry would just always kind of laugh at him. My dad could get angry as shit, and Uncle Terry would just kind of laugh at him and just completely unbothered by everybody else's. And I think Uncle Terry maybe just dealt with, like, I know he had a temper. There ain't no son of John Longmire's didn't have some kind of temper. Right. But he didn't really put it on display. He could always keep his in check for the most part. He wasn't like my dad and the rest of his brothers. I seen my Uncle Terry lose his flip shit and come on. My Uncle Gary flip shit and come unglued. I seen my Uncle Stanley my Uncle Larry tear off across the yard at his son Dwayne, like he's ready to throw a car at him. Y'all have heard stories about my old man. Never seen any of this out of my Uncle Terry. Now, I've seen him lose his cool a couple times working on something, but he was a pretty good mechanic. Anything with his hands, man, was just good at. Music, mechanics, it didn't matter. But my dad got into computers. My dad didn't like video games, but Uncle Terry liked video games. And he would talk to me about video games. And when we would go hang out at their house or spend the night at their house, he had a Commodore 64, and he had some games on it, and he'd let me and Justin play on the Commodore 64. And he also, my Uncle Terry loved stand-up comedy. And so they got the cable channels at their house, and we would go sit on the bed in their room, and we would watch, I think it was Caroline's Comedy Hour. And that's where I saw, like, John Panette. That's where I learned John Panette's routine from when I was a kid. And back then, Tim Allen was still doing stand-up. You'd see Tim Allen on there, and you'd see Miss Cheryl on there. It was just fascinating to me. I used to watch Paula Poundstone a lot. It was fascinating to me. Somebody could never in those days did it dawn on me that was going to be something I wanted to do. But I sure loved watching it. Jeff Dunham and Peanut. Oh, God. Back in the day, in the old days, before Jeff become whatever Jeff is now. But back then, first time I saw Peanut, I thought that was the funniest shit I'd ever seen in my life. And Uncle Terry used to do the peanut. Hey, Bruno, you're going to like this one. It's simple. You know, like Uncle Terry would make all the jokes. He knew all the routines. He liked it when I did the John Panette thing. He liked John Panette. Uncle Terry was a big, big man, right? Like, I seen him eat a whole package of Oreos in one sitting one time. Like, so fast. He was just a big dude, man. And fishing fool, that man knew everything. Like, as good as my Papa Longmire was a fisherman, I don't think he ever held a candle to my Uncle Terry. My Uncle Terry studied fish. He could tell you about where they slept, how they ate, what their patterns were. He studied fish. And man, catch fish anywhere. We're going to Gladewater. He used to love Fish Lake Gladewater. He was just great to be around when I was a kid. I was always happy to be around him. I was always happy to be around my Aunt Robbie. She was fun. I loved spending the night at their house and hanging out with them because it was always fun. It was always a good time. We were always going to have a good time. Justin had a, they had a Honda Odyssey. Uncle Terry had found this old used Honda Odyssey. I don't know if you remember that or if some of you are overseas, you might not know what that is, but Honda back then made this thing. It was kind of like a big go-kart with dune buggy tires on it. And it was called a Honda Odyssey. It had a little, I think it was a little 8-10 horse engine on it. And they had, Uncle Terry had found one of them used and fixed it up and got it running. And boy, me and Justin would drive that Honda Odyssey all over their property. They had a little piece of land out in Liberty City by that time. And boy, we'd just have us a good old time. When I first started driving, Aunt Robbie was one of the first ones to throw me her keys. Some of y'all heard me do the joke on stage about sitting in a Nissan Sentra too fast. She had a Nissan Sentra with a 5-speed in it. And she knew I knew how to drive standard, but I wasn't real good at it yet. And she let me take Julie and Justin, my sister, down to the snow cone stand, get everybody snow cones. And I parked on a hill, and I had never done that in a standard transmission before. So when we got in the car, every time I tried to back up the hill, the car died. And of course, Julie was little. She started crying and wailing. And then I started freaking out about what to do. And I finally just jammed it in reverse and floored it and dumped the clutch and probably just about ripped all the engine mounts out of that poor little Nissan Sentra to get it back up that hill and turned around. And by the time we got back to the house, of course, Julie is telling her version of the events in which I almost killed them. And Kimberly's like, yeah, it was pretty scary. And just talking about it. And I'm trying to explain what happened. I remember Aunt Robbie just come over to me and she goes, hey, I've had that happen to me before. Next time it happens, pull your emergency brake up, get the car, push the clutch in, get the car in gear, start easing out on the clutch and let down your emergency brake at the same time. And it'll help you back out of that or get out of that spot or off the hill. And like everybody else was like, give me grief. But Aunt Robbie just came over and told me how not to do it next time. Like it was so nice. And she was just, well, I was an idiot teenager and she was used to dealing with kids with disabilities. So I probably fit the mold at the time. She's a good lady. Still is. Still a wonderful lady. I have another little moment with Uncle Terry that I think about often is when I was young and I was living up there and I was running around with Bobby and I had that old Trans Am. And I'd gone out to Liberty City for something and I wasn't making much money then. I didn't have a whole lot of money in my pocket and wasn't even sure I had enough gas to get back home. And I drove by their house. I saw Uncle Terry's. Uncle Terry always drove his little Chevrolet Blazer for a long time, or GMC version of it, little S15 type thing. And I saw it there, and Aunt Robbie's car there. And so I pulled in, and he was sitting on the porch, in the porch swing. And he, of course, gave me all the greetings, and we talked a little bit. And he's like, well, how's your, he said, your daddy said you're looking for a job. I was like, yeah, I ain't found one yet, but I'm going to go do some interviews this week and stuff. And I remember he just, without even thinking about it, he goes, well, I know I've been there. And he pulled his wallet out, and he gave me $20. He goes, why don't you take some money to help you out, gas and stuff. And he just gave me that $20. just kindness. Just, hey, let me see if I can help you out, kiddo. Throw me a 20. And back in them days, the $20 went a long way. $20 bought gas and food and did a lot back in those days. Him and Aunt Robbie had left the church, and I don't know all the details on that, but the church hadn't treated them kindly, and they left the church, and they never went back. And, but still just good, just, some people are just good, you know? The funniest thing about it is I really think my Uncle Terry was my dad's best friend. My dad just didn't have a lot of friends, but him and Terry grew up together. They were probably the closest out of all of them, you know what I mean, was my dad and Terry. My dad and Terry were tight. They were thick as thieves, and they both knew computers. They both could have the most boring conversations in the world. Uncle Terry just didn't get... Uncle Terry would talk about the things he liked talking about, and that was just kind of the end of it. He didn't get... People would bring up politics, all that kind of stuff. He'd just stay out of it. It wasn't his lane. He didn't feel the need to override somebody else's opinion or anything like that. He was just... But I really think he was my dad's real best friend. I really think that's the case. I think my dad had him, and my dad was real close to my Uncle Stanley. And he lost Uncle Stanley, and him and Terry got tighter. And I think about that often. Like, my father, I wonder about the damage that has been done to his psyche, having to lose Uncle Stanley. And then very shortly after Uncle Stanley died, Uncle Terry died, my dad's youngest brother. I remember it because it was another night I was working at the Laugh Stop, and it's the other time my cousin Amy came and told me somebody died after a show, you know. It was, I think that is the time Amy came and told me. I think with Uncle Stanley, I got a call, but Amy and her boyfriend at the time had come to the comedy show. They were living in Houston, and they had come see me at the comedy show, and after the show, she said, I didn't want to tell you before the show, but Uncle Terry died this morning, and he had a massive heart attack. They say what it really, he had like fallen down and ruptured something inside of him, and he didn't think it was a big deal, so he didn't go to the doctor, and then it turned into a big deal, and then the stress of that ended up causing, I think he perforated his colon or something when he fell, and the stress of all that on his body caused a heart attack, and we lost him. And I remember then just like being worried about my dad, because it was so, I knew Uncle Terry was my dad's best friend, and it was so soon after Uncle Stanley had died. And that's the craziest thing. Like, I remember me and Amy talking about this, like, but now even more so, I think our dads were robbed of their brothers, but not by war, just time. 2 of 5 went to Vietnam and came back. Like that wasn't super common. 2 brothers go off to Vietnam and come back, but Uncle Larry and Uncle Gary went off to Vietnam and come back unscathed, you know? I mean, not unscathed, but whole as far as physically. But since that, my dad has had to bury every one of his brothers. He had 4 brothers. He's had to bury all 4 of them. And that's a perspective. That's something I reckon only a man who has buried all of his brothers can understand. I cannot imagine. It has to be one of the loneliest feelings there is. I mean, to just, and he's not even the youngest, you know, but he has had to stand at a gravesite and say goodbye to all four of his brothers. I've been a pallbearer for every one of them. And now it's just him and his sister, you know, and she's, my Aunt Linda's not in good health. She actually just had a fall a while back and broke something in her neck, and she's not doing good. But I can't imagine what that's like. I can't begin to fathom. I have the one person that I call my brother, and Joey is my brother, but I'm terrified of that phone call, of ever getting that phone call one day. I don't want to live in a world where Joey doesn't exist. So I hope I go before he does, so he has to deal with it. Because I'm selfish like that. That's all right. I'm owning it. Anyway, I hadn't talked about him a lot, and I thought about that. I was thinking about him the other night. I was having some drinks on the porch, and I was thinking about that day with the Sunday school, and I was thinking about him telling me when I was learning to drive that don't hit your brakes in a curve. It makes your brake pads wear out faster. I just was remembering all these little kindnesses he paid me over the years, and the many, many kindnesses my Aunt Robbie has shown me, and they were just fantastic people just living their lives. And, you know, my cousin Justin grew up and married a real sweet lady named Valerie, and he has a good life with her. My cousin Julie's got a lot of good things going for her, and I think maybe a couple kids. And, you know, y'all did it. Y'all pulled it off. Y'all did the thing. Your kids grew up. They kind of got their lives together. You did it. Justin, about as good a human being as you'd ever want to know. I feel bad during the pandemic, Justin. I was doing a lot of leather work, and Justin sent me a knife, this custom knife somebody made him, and he wanted me to make him a knife case for it, and I started making the case for it, and then the truck astrology stuff blew up, and all of a sudden I was busy doing gigs again and all kind of stuff, and I got bowed up, and I couldn't do all my leather work, and I ended up just having to send him his knife back. I never got to finish that leather case for him, but I still got the pieces of it over in my leather box, so maybe one of these days I'll find something that looks similar to that knife and finish that case for him and send it to him. I ought to. Let's wrap it up there. This ain't going to be a real long one this week. We're going to do some testimonials. And I'm going to address something. I don't want anybody. We'll get to it when we get to it. Let's do some testimonials. It's from last week's episode. Oh, our old buddy, Jake of All Trades, Master of Fun. I wish I could clip the last paragraph starting around 5 minutes. I couldn't agree more. No one has the same beliefs as me, and that's okay. Yeah, it's just, you don't have to. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that because of something somebody said in the comments. But you don't. I don't know when we became this. Everybody's got to believe the same as me. If they don't, dehumanize them. I don't know when that crept in, but it's frightening. It's not the world I grew up in. And even back then, you know, we had all kind of other stuff going on, but it wasn't like that. But my uncles, I remember when they would argue about politics, and none of them agree on nothing. They'd all argue and talk shit, and that'd be the end of it, you know? Nobody was saying, I don't want to live in a country with these other people and stuff like that. And that's the part that bothers me, you know? I think we've strayed a long way from the seed of what this whole experiment was supposed to be about. Jake, I'm with you. And it's okay with me, too. I, you know, The next testimony is from Matt, Blue-Eyed Viking. He said, I know you don't normally get political, JW, but now is the time. Trust me, no one on the left watches you. It's a different day and time. They hate us. And I talked to you in the comments, I couldn't disagree with you more, but I kept thinking about it because I had somebody else say something along those lines to me, and it really bothers me because I'm not getting that from anybody else. It's just a few people that are doing that. And to me, that feels like a threat. It feels not a threat, but like you're pushing something at me. And I don't enjoy that. And that kind of stuff happens to all of us. But when you say, trust me, no one on the left watches you, the fact that you tried to sell me on it tells me you haven't really been listening to me at all. When you live in a vacuum, you start thinking the vacuum is the whole world. That's why I keep friends of different stripes, so I'm not breathing the same hot air all day. I talk to folks across the spectrum every single week. My neighbor, most MAGA guy you ever met in your life. I love that guy. He's a good dude. I don't think he's a harmful person. One of my best friends is as far left as you probably get. I don't agree with all his stuff. I don't even agree with a lot of it. But I know he's a good-hearted person that looks out for the people in his life. That's why I tell you, I judge people by their actions. I talk to folks across the spectrum every single week. Not hypotheticals, real people. I see the zip codes on the ticket sales, the addresses on the merch orders, the emails that start with, you probably won't agree with me, but I love the show. And it comes from all kinds, from barbecue joints to vegan taco trucks to union halls, deer blinds, minivans, and lifted trucks. It comes from all kinds of places. And what they all share is simple. They needed to laugh, and they found their way here, or they found their way to my show, or they found their way to my content. I know an actual physicist, an astrophysicist in North Carolina that watches my content. Politics is theater, and it's not even the good kind. It's kind with a fog machine and paper crowns where the actors forget their lines and blame it on the audience. If you want to buy into the play, that's your choice. But I'm not wasting my daylight on it. I'd rather spend my time on stories, family, and getting a room full of strangers to breathe in time together. So, I mean, you can believe whatever fairy tales you want. I still love you. But don't come in here trying to tell me who hates me and who doesn't watch. I keep a close eye on my analytics. I know who buys tickets, who buys shirts, who shows up, who listens to the podcast on their drive to work. It's almost like this is my fucking job or something. I mean, I feel like somebody is selling you hate wholesale and you're buying it up like toilet paper in the pandemic. You remember how that went? Folks had mountains of Charmin and no food. That's what this is. It's full up on panic paper and starving for perspective. So let's be clear. You don't know my audience. I do. You don't see my inbox. I do. You don't read the room. I live in it. If your story tells you whole groups of people don't watch, that story is lying to you and probably lying to you for profit. Step outside the bubble, breathe some fresh air, and laugh with the rest of us. Because the people you think aren't here, they're already here laughing louder than you. And the only one missing out because of those feelings is you. You know? There are groups of people trying to make life difficult for us all. And I believe they're friends groups all across the spectrum that are doing things to try to make everybody's life difficult. And I think when you feed into all that bullshit and play the game, then you just make them stronger. And maybe I'll find out I'm wrong one day. Maybe I will. But you know what? I'd rather be wrong believing in the good of people than be right believing the worst. Hope you guys tune in next week. I'm excited about it. Please do me a favor, like and subscribe. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, all that helps my analytics. Hope your week's going well for you. I hope things are going better in your life. I hope maybe some of the gnarliness of the outside world is calming down. I'd like to believe it is. I hope I can get enough people in those rooms this weekend that we can just have some good shows and I can work some more on the special. I hope everything goes well with the Volkswagen. I'll be sure to let you guys know when I'm in the chat. And I'm hoping to have a bunch of cool video to show you next week with some voiceover work and such like that. I'm beyond excited about everything we're trying to do this weekend. Like I said, also very trepidatious. Also trepidatious about that Cadillac I rented. Might be bad optics to be seen in a Cadillac right now, but whatever, it is what it is. Don't trust Mama's car to get us there and back without having some kind of issue right now, and I can't get the damn thing registered, so I'm trying to get all that fixed. Can't get it inspected to get the registration current. That's out, so I don't want to risk any problems on the trip. We got a lot of plans, a lot of moving parts we're trying to make happen. And I'm hoping I get to visit with all my family I want to visit. I know a bunch of them are coming to the Saturday night show, so I'm looking forward to that, seeing my cousin Julie and cousin Shane and all them and having a little fellowship with them. I did find out that the theater where I'm doing the shows used to be a porn theater back in the 70s for a short period of time, and it's where they first showed the Debbie Does Dallas video. So I've decided to wait and let the Pentecostals know that after the show, because maybe I'll just bring it up at the show. That'd be kind of funny. But I decided to do my crazy thing I'm doing where I'm doing the Wrecking Yard. I'm not taking an opener. I'm just going to have Jackson, the owner of the theater. He's an entertaining cat. If you hadn't seen the podcast I did with him, you should go check it out. And I'll put a link to that. But he's a crazy cat. And I'm just going to have him bring me on stage. And I'm going to do the Wrecking Yard. I'm going to do what I did in Chicago. I'm going to do that special combination of the Wrecking Yard and the Tipping Point. And because those folks are just pretty much buying tickets to see me anyways, and I just want to give them more of that. I want to give them a good night, and hopefully we'll sell a bunch of stickers and come home with a little money in my pocket. We'll see. The word that kept coming to my mind when I kept thinking about Uncle Terry was unbothered. I kept thinking about that. It kept striking a chord in me. I was trying to figure something out about it. Like, my Uncle Terry was an unbothered man, at least from the outside looking in. Every one of John Lohmeyer's sons had a temper. It just showed itself different. Some of them flashed hot like lightning, like my daddy. Some of them smoldered, held it tight until it burned a hole clean through an engine block. But Uncle Terry just let most of it pass. I'm sure he raised his voice from time to time. Any man will if you live long enough in this world. But most of the time, he wore the look of somebody who had already decided he wasn't going to let this thing or whatever this thing was take up any more space in his soul than it deserved. That's rare. I feel like most of us wake up bothered. I do. Bothered by the news, bothered by bills, bothered by who said what about who. The whole world stands on a street corner waving its arms, trying to drag us into a fight that don't even belong to us. Politics, gossip, arguments with strangers on the internet. All of it is bait. Most days we take it. But Uncle Terry didn't. He talked about the things he liked. Computers, comedy, music, fishing, And he didn't need you to like them back to feel his own joy. He didn't measure the worth of his interests against the crowd. He didn't need agreement to keep his peace. I think that's something worth aiming at, to be able to walk through this life without carrying every grievance home like a sack of wet laundry. To be able to just enjoy the things that light you up without waiting for someone else to clap for you. To choose joy and keep it. To stay unbothered in the middle of all this noise. And if I take anything from my Uncle Terry into my own days, it's this. I'm going to learn the difference between what deserves my fire and what deserves my silence. I'm going to spend less time clenched up in battles that don't matter and more time unbothered the way he was. Content, steady, still finding reasons to smile. And that's the spirit that I want here in the Wrecking Yard. Everybody's welcome here. But if you show up peddling discord and falsehoods, we're going to point you to the door and tell you to drop that nonsense off in the gutter where it belongs. Don't mistake my kindness for weakness or take it for granted. I've bounced off roofs. I've been beat nearly to death. I've been cut on. I've been run over. I've been counted out. And every single time I got back up swinging. Don't let people put you in that position. I'm rooting for y'all. I tell you that every week, and I mean it 100%. Even when we disagree, I mean it. I'm rooting for you. Every single one of you. Every single one of you that listens to this, comes here to share, I'm rooting for you. See you guys next week. And hopefully I have some cool footage of Volkswagen for you. I'm JW, and I love you.
Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie tale? Sure that you really want to know real behind all the stories they told. The cicadas don't lie. They scream what they know. Rust don't forgive the bones.
Can't live this divided. Shadow stretch long. And there's no success for any of us if it continues to go on this way. You thought were your wrong. Are you really digging? Not a damn bit. Or is that just a lie tale to help? I sure wish I had the solution. Sure that you really